I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry.
Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Ah, yes, it's World Cup fever time as we are less than a month away from the grandest event in all of sports. And of course, this being soccer to the max, we cannot, even if we never talked about international soccer ever, we couldn't not talk about the World Cup and its groups and everything else. So this begins our World Cup preview shows, of course, being the first one we're doing Group A this evening, morning, afternoon, whenever it is you're listening to us. And why not? We have to bring in the resident Russian, Rachel McCrigger, to talk the host country.
The resident Russian. Wonder if I could get that on a license plate holder.
Or t-shirt.
T-shirt too, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. So yes, the host, do you want me to just dive into this?
No, we should probably do introductions here for a second. Eric, of course, sadly he's stuck with, I guess, either the easiest team to predict in the group or the hardest team to discuss in the group in Saudi Arabia. This won't happen every time for him, thankfully, but...
But believe it or not, this is pretty easy for me, although I am going to say I'm really not going to like them come tournament time. This is a no. Just be prepared.
And I'm tasked with Egypt and Uruguay as well here to round out the group. But yeah, so we're talking about Group A, which includes those four teams that we talked about. We'll do Group B probably on Thursday, and then we'll take a little bit of a break and do our regular show Sunday and maybe perhaps another group on Sunday as well. And then Monday, we have some U.S. Men's National Team friendly against Bolivia to do, and then we'll probably do Group D after that. So that at least you have our first four groups kind of outlined there. And if you've been living under a rock for like the past, I don't know, our entire lifetimes, you don't know if that's the Ricky Martin Cup of Life song that I put at the beginning there. Every one of these, I'll play a different World Cup song because why not? They make you have to have themes for these things. And the Russian one's actually not too bad. I don't know if you've heard it, Rachel, but... It's actually pretty decent. Now, the Jason Derulo one that they made for Coca-Cola is not that great, but...
Wait, when you say the most recent one, are you talking the one with Will Smith and Diplo?
I haven't heard the Will Smith one yet. Okay. Is it out there?
It's not yet, but there's a lot of groundswell behind it, and it's even got me intrigued.
Yeah, Will Smith's usually pretty good at music, for the most part. And he does it so infrequently that you kind of are... sort of just enamored by the fact that you forgot that he could do this. So I'm sort of interested in it. It at least is different than Shakira's done the last like three English ones. So interesting they chose somebody else. I guess Shakira finally said, okay, I'm done doing this, and bring back Will Smith for this. Interesting. So I guess they don't have a video yet. If the song's out there, they don't have a video for it, so that's probably why it's not out there going crazy, but I'm sure by next week or so they'll have it out there. But Yeah, the Russian one's pretty decent. I'll probably play that at some point during these previews. But yeah, so might as well go ahead and get started with the interesting tale of the World Cup hosts, Rachel.
I have my Russian vocabulary pronunciation guides. So, World Cup is Kubok Mira. So, welcome to the Kubok Mira World Cup. Man, are these things handy. The World Cup, listen, folks, Russia actually has a chance in their group. They better beat Saudi Arabia. Sorry, Eric. And their matches against Uruguay and Egypt are going to be interesting. I say that because Russia has a really good goalkeeper, and that's Igor Akinfeev. He has been their rock in some really tough matches. He had a decent Confederation Cup, and he's balanced out on top by Fedor Smolov, who is their big-time striker. He's been named Player of the Year in the Russian League 2 years in a row now, and he's gotten interest from Germany and England, but he's stayed in Russia. He probably won't after this World Cup, but that's just the way that it goes. So I guess if you have to ask who my player to watch is between the two, I would say Igor Akinfeev, because I feel like it's going to be a very defensive-minded World Cup from Russia. I don't really think they have a choice to do anything but defensive-minded and leave the attacking to the forwards and the attacking midfielders. This is going to be a tough one for Igor Akinfeev, but then again, you know, there's a difference when you're playing in a World Cup in Brazil, which they did in 2014, and then a World Cup in 2018 in Russia, your own host nation. So it's going to be interesting. Russia doesn't really have a lot of success in World Cups, but that's fine. We're new. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, you have success as the Soviet Union, but not as Russia itself, as they've kind of slowly turned their attention towards trying to develop the game in the country. Obviously, hockey is still the number one deal there in Russia, but they've, you know, they qualified for the Euros, didn't do great. They did about the same in the Confed Cup, but obviously Confed Cup, you got tougher groups because you've only got 8 teams there. But a lot of, what do you think about the coach? Because there's players that just chose not to come play for the national team because they had a problem with this coach.
Do not even get me to pronounce the name, but his first name is Stanislav, and his record with the team in 18 matches played as of March 2018 is 18 matches in total, 5 wins, 5 draws, 8 losses. It's been a challenge for them, but one thing that I can really respect about Russia is that they, and the Russian Federation for their soccer, they didn't really jump the gun after the Confed Cup to just be like, oh, well, we didn't get what we wanted, so we're firing our coach. And they've kept him. And yeah, there's some players that don't want to play for him. But then again, it's the World Cup. So you do have your players like Fedor Smolov sticking around, Igor Akinfeev, which are the two top players on the team. And this is a coach who's very defensive-minded because he used to play goalkeeper. So he knows what he's talking about when it comes to defense. I'm excited to see them in the group stage.
Eric, you're the official pronunciation man of the podcast. So C-H-E-R-C-H-E-S-O-V.
C-H-E-R-C-H-E, and what was those last few letters?
S-S-O-V.
Cherchesov?
Yeah. Seems about right. Cherchesov. Mm-hmm. Close enough. I will give Russia credit. You know, they do have to play just a bunch of friendlies for, like, you know, 2 years since the Euros. And they've chosen some really tough competition, losing to France, Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Portugal, Costa Rica, Ivory Coast. Those are no joke teams. They drew with Spain, which I think Spain probably didn't have their, like, top A players, but still, it's Spain, Belgium, you know, those are some really rough teams you're playing.
They're getting ready to put their foot on the gas. I mean, they could have just made it easy and just played teams like Azerbaijan, Albania, New Zealand, for goodness sakes. But instead, they're actually playing quality opponents just so they can get a taste of what's happening. They don't want to go into this thing unprepared.
No, totally, for sure. Eric, you missed your cue, man.
Well, that's because it couldn't have room to breathe. But I will say this. Why play mailmen when you can play a real team? I like that approach.
They did beat the mailmen. So.
And your point?
Hey, I'm just saying, they beat the mailmen. That's good for them.
You beat mailmen. Now you get to learn how to win without using polonium soup. That's only step one.
No, I it's amazing to me that Igor Akinfev is still there, and he's only freaking 31. Like, I feel like he should be like 41 or something.
Oh yeah, he's their lifesaver.
He's been around since that, you know, the entire Euro 2008 squad that was supposed to, that, you know, lit up the world on fire. And there's only two, him and Jiří Šurkov still around from that team. So it's amazing to me that was the golden generation and there's very few of them left. But yeah, you weren't kidding about the defensive formation. They're going to play a 3-5-2, something around that, and just try to hope that Smolov will score for them.
And I mean, Igor Akinfev, 104 appearances for Russia. So it's not, like you said, Sean, it's not like he's ill-prepared. I mean, he's been the captain since March 2017, so he knows what he's doing.
Oh, for sure. We're not going to give predictions on these. These are just straight previews. We're going to have a whole entire prediction show the Sunday before the World Cup starts. So if you're wondering why we're not, I'm not having everybody go through that, we're making you wait. But anything else you want to say on Russia before we move along here?
Give us a little credit. I think Russia might surprise people. I know when we were talking off air the one day, we were talking about how Egypt really has Mo Salah and a couple other good players, but other than that, they're not really a complete team. Give Russia some credit. I think that, you know, playing in front of your home fans is going to bring something completely different for them. I don't think they're going to get the crowds that they got during the Confed Cup. I think they're going to be bigger and better. And I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. Do I see them making it far if they make it to the elimination rounds? Probably not, but I think even just making it to that would be a big boost for them. And just have a little faith. I know Americans don't like Russians right now, but have a little faith, at least for the resident Russian. Spasiba.
Yeah, I think with Russia, it's, you got to remember who's in this group. And that first game is going to be huge for them. If they can get the 3 points where they need them, you can't get a draw there. It sets you really behind. Obviously, Uruguay and Egypt have a huge match the next day that could very well decide who winds up where if, you know, somebody can get the 3 points. But we saw in the Confed Cup that Russia was there every game. They were up for it because of that home crowd, you know, for the most part. And you have that sort of same setup here where, okay, you have, you know, in Egypt, you have Uruguay, who's obviously they're super talented, just like Portugal was, but they gave Portugal a game for a while. So, you know, I think if they can score, then I think they'll be okay. My thing I'm worried about is letting in goals. Are there going to be a defensive liability to where, you know, there's only so much Akinfeev can do.
Right.
Speaking of defensive liabilities, perhaps no bigger one than Saudi Arabia, Eric.
I mean, look, Juan Antonio Pizzi, you were a great player. You were a decent manager. Don't take my advice literally. When I say you need two strikers, I mean you need to have two strikers on the pitch simultaneously. Not you need two strikers in your entire roster.
Well, but they may not have more than two strikers.
They had a bunch of call-ups, but the problem is when you have these call-ups and when you have these guys playing against teams, especially if you're bringing in a squad against an opponent like Iraq, you may want to kind of, I don't know, let them loose. Do you need as many midfielders on your squad as you do? Do you?
To be fair to Pizzi, it's not like he's been with them the entire campaign.
He was their third manager in 3 months, and he's led them an entire total of 6 matches. Yes, 3 wins, a draw, 2 losses, but still, you're responsible for these February call-ups, and you decide not to bring a guy, you know, in Nasser Al-Shamrani. 19 goals and 78 caps could have been at least somewhat handy.
Yeah, you've got Mohamed Al-Sawali, who's their big goal scorer. Obviously, you know, the competition in Asia is not the best when you get outside the top, you know, the Japans, the South Koreas, the Australias, and a few others. I mean, this is where this is going to be tested, right?
Yeah, altogether, you have 17 players from 2 Saudi clubs, Al Ahly and Al Hilal. Great for chemistry, but you hit the nail on the head. What's the kind of competition that you're really facing? Because guess what? You have been on an extremely, extremely rocky run, and you're starting to find ways to put in goals. They've had back-to-back 2-0 wins against Algeria and Greece, but that's following 0-4 against Belgium, 1-4 against Iraq. Where are these goals going to come from? And especially if you're shaping up to play, what, a 4-5-1? Or, God forbid, a 4-6? No, I'm not going to tune in for that.
I think they're set to play a 4-2-3-1, but it'll change around. Pizzi does try to be a bit more... The guy doesn't know how to put a defensive formation out there. Look what he did with Chile for all those years. For a couple of years, he just took the Sampioli way and transferred that on. But, I think it's all going to depend on how many goals do they let in to where they have to go forward. And then they just keep leaking goals because they don't have enough to... Let's put this in perspective. The Al-Sawali goals, like 8 of those came against Timor-Leste.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. Like, does anybody even know where that is? Like, I mean...
Oh, wait a minute. It's it's west of that Trans-Tasman area, farther south than New Zealand. So you're talking right in that little South Pacific area there, Timor-Leste.
Yeah, I mean, Eric's probably one of the few people that really just know where that is. I'm saying, most people...
Now, keep in mind, I could be completely wrong on that, but...
No, they haven't been to the World Cup many times. They got through the knockout round in 94 off of that incredible goal that's probably one of the best goals ever in World Cups, that he went the length of the field, you know. It's just... 2002, you'll never Saudi Arabia for the Miroslav Klose special where he got like four goals and an 8-0 rout or whatever. It's just, they are the happy to be here team of the World Cup. They're the lowest seeded team in the World Cup. I don't know. Look, PC has a nice repertoire or whatever, but I can't see it with them.
No. And believe it or not, I was strangely close. I thought it was south of Australia when it's north of Australia. So I was in the ballpark.
At least you got it around that area. And it's difficult too because it's not like they just show Saudi Arabian highlights over here in the United States.
And honestly, why would they? No. Okay, you could get a little bit of support from Taseer Al-Jassim. He was having a connection with guys like Asiri up front, but no. Rachel, let's just say you can get count on a good 3 points early on. From there, it's up to you.
You hope so, anyway.
Spasiba, Eric.
I'm going to move us on to the 46th ranked Egypt here. And of course they won their group in qualifying, knocking out Ghana from being able to be in the World Cup, which I'm sure upset many. And they had to have their star man Mo Salah score a penalty in literally the last seconds to defeat Congo and get through, which is amazing in itself. They haven't been in a World Cup since 1990. But they've been on the rise. They played second in the African Cup of Nations in 2017. But honestly, this is very much like the early Cristiano Ronaldo teams of Portugal. They are counting on one man to carry this team. And this is a team that plays rather defensively. They're going to play a 4-2-3-1, but it might be more like a 4-5-1 at times. They have guys that can pass it in to Salah, like Trezeguet. Yes, that's the guy's nickname. He has no relation to David Trezeguet, by the way. Just in case anybody's out there wondering, he doesn't. Ahmed El-Mohammadi is also probably going to be doing some things both defensively and on the forward end. Abdallah Saeed as well. He's going to be trying to filter it into Salah. But it's really going to be, can Salah carry what he did at Liverpool? He's still got the Champions League to play as well. Can he carry that pressure of the entire nation of Egypt on his shoulders? Not to mention he's not helped out by the fact that they have a 45-year-old goalkeeper who, the moment he walks on the pitch, he will break the record of the oldest player to ever play in a World Cup, Elsam El Hadri. I mean...
Wait a minute. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, 45-year-old goalkeeper.
Oh my god, it's soccer's version of George Blanda. Shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, and in situations where... like, you're going to be playing two of the world's best strikers in the first game. I can't imagine at 45 you're just, you know, fleet of foot.
At 45, you practically need a cortisone shot just to walk onto the pitch, and then you're done.
Yeah. I hope they have somebody waiting in the rings, but I mean, that must tell you their goalkeeper situation if you're playing the 45-year-old. I think it's more of a, very much like the Colombian goalkeeper last time around. I think it's a very ceremonial thing. I don't know that he's going to play all three games, but you never know. You gotta think about this, though. 32 goals for Liverpool this season. Salah has been absolutely on fire. If he wins the champion, if you know Liverpool win the Champions League, he could very well win the Ballon d'Or. I mean, again, he is in form. Barring any kind of crazy injury in these, you know, last friendlies that are about to start up for all these teams, and obviously in the Champions League itself, he's the guy that's going to have to carry them. And I don't know. Again, this is something you're going to read in a lot of previews, but I feel like it's fair. Is he going to be enough for this team? With the host nation bearing down on you, you don't know where Russia's going to be at when it comes to their point tally situation. That's a lot to deal with, you know, for a team, again, that doesn't have the experience, a nation that hasn't been there since 1990. You could very well see Egypt melt under pressure or get too defensive for their own good and not be able to get it out to Salah. So that's what I'm worried about with Egypt, is can they supply him the ball enough? But aside from Saudi Arabia, between Russia and Uruguay, who Uruguay have a very staunch defense, to make him make a play. Now, he is one of those guys that all it takes is one moment, and they could win 1-0, but will he get that one moment is my issue, you know.
Personally, against Saudi Arabia, I would say yes, but when you're getting, especially against Russia, they had to, with being there, with seeing what he's done through, not just with Liverpool, but for throughout Europe in the Champions League this season, they are going to know better than just about anybody, at least you would think, how to close him down. So the matter is, can they at least potentially get a draw against Uruguay and put themselves in position with 4 points?
Yeah, certainly. I think they only scored 8 goals in qualifying, but they only allowed 4. So that lets you know exactly what this is about. Mo Salah had to score about half of those by himself.
Mm-hmm. So
this is if there's a one-man team in this entire World Cup, it's Egypt, and I wonder if that's going to be an issue. Again, your goalkeeper is also going to be an issue if he's expected to play more than a game. You know, again, I don't think you want to get routed by Uruguay either, because it may come down to goal difference between you and Russia. So that's another thing that they have to keep track of as well. So I think it's up against it for Egypt, but you don't want to count out that magic of Mo Salah the year that he's had. And moving on to perhaps one of the most... They're weird because they can be a Jekyll and Hyde at times, Uruguay, but they're very consistent in very many situations, including their coach, who is the longest tenured coach in all of the entire World Cup, Oscar Tavares, who has been around since 2006. That's only because Joachim Löw was not the coach in 2006, we remember. A man that's very familiar to all of us here, Jürgen Klinsmann, was the coach of Germany in 2006. So, the number 17th ranked Uruguay comes in second place in CONMEBOL, only behind Brazil, but they were ahead of Argentina, Colombia, and Peru. But honestly, if you weren't Brazil, all of CONMEBOL at one point was in second place. That was an entire crazy, chaotic thing for almost the entire qualifying. And it's still a testament to Uruguay to play second when the other two World Cups that they've qualified through consecutively, this is now their third one, they qualified to the playoff. So much better standing for Uruguay this time around. Of course, a lot of this core team is still here from the team that lost to Colombia 4 years ago. And it's led by two of the world's best strikers in Luis Suarez, who's overcome his mental issues or biting issues, whatever you want to call those. And Edinson Cavani, both of those guys are coming off absolute tears of years. Suarez has 25 goals and 11 assists for Barcelona. And Edinson Cavani with 28 goals and 6 assists for Paris Saint-Germain in Ligue 1. So, you know, Luis Suarez is the all-time leading goal scorer for Uruguay. It's, look, you don't have Diego Forlan out there making things happen, but you have certainly between Carlos Sanchez in the midfield helping out, and then Diego Godin and the rest of that defensive lineup there for Uruguay. I think it's going to be a tough one for all these teams. If Uruguay come out scoring, and they scored the second most goals in all of CONMEBOL qualifying, I think they were only, what, I want to say, 5 goals behind Brazil for that entire qualifying campaign. And Brazil was absolutely ridiculous during that qualifying campaign. I think they only allowed like less than 10 goals, and they had about 40 themselves, and Uruguay had a little bit less than that. So yeah, I just, again, if these guys come in on form, I'm not expecting, they could easily win, they could easily be happy with a 2-1 win every game. I don't think that they need to go out there and prove any kind of statement and win like 7-0 or anything like that. But it's hard to imagine the way Uruguay are with the talent they have, them doing anything but being top of the group, you know? So I want to say it's theirs to lose. But they could easily lose it.
They could, but I think when you're trying to get a team that's borderline redemption after coming so close, and you have the team really together the way you want it, they're going to be ones to really make a statement. Now, of course they're going to shoot for 9 points. I think 9 points is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So, not just being top of the group, firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, because whoever tops this group has a tough, tough play in the next round, that round of 16, which you would assume is either Portugal or Spain. So, you don't want to come in limping. Or you don't want to come in barely getting through and having to use up so much energy because you have two really rough teams that you're having to play. Now, obviously, we'll get into Group B later, but Cristiano Ronaldo is starting to show his age a little bit, and that might affect him in this World Cup. But all things considered, it's still Cristiano Ronaldo, and he still hasn't won a World Cup. Yeah, he won a Euro, finally. But this is a different ballgame. You know, everybody keeps trying to define Lionel Messi by the fact that, well, he can never be Maradona because he never won the World Cup after all these times of trying. Well, same would go for Ronaldo, right? So, I mean, this is why it's very important. If Uruguay want to be able to rest players in that third game, come out there. Maybe try to make that statement against Egypt when everybody's trying to talk about Mo Salah until they can't talk anymore. You know?
Oh yeah. Because that's going to be the game where you're going to have your highlight of stars. That's where it's going to be your Suarez and Cavani shining, because you still got those bitter things about what their teams couldn't do in Champions League. So, that, if you're going to look for the marquee match of that group, that's going to be the one.
Yeah, certainly. And then they have Saudi Arabia in the middle. So they could already, I mean, potentially they could have anywhere from 4 to 6 points by the time they even faced Russia. And, you know, Russia, by the time they face Uruguay, could have anywhere from the same. So that's going to be an interesting one. They could be fighting for first, or they could already be qualified for first, depending on what happens behind them. But they certainly, I think they know what's up against it with what they're potentially facing in the next round. And I think when you're one of the top players, that does have to creep into your mind. But obviously, you can't get ahead of yourself either. That's something that Uruguay has to be careful of not being overconfident. And that could come and bite them. If, say, you know, Cavani and Suarez are not focused, and, you know, they're not getting the service that they should be getting, or, you know, whatever the problem is, you know, Diego Godin's not on it, and Mo Salah does have that moment, or, you know, somehow Saudi Arabia get a crazy early goal or something like that. It's all possible. It's the World Cup. We've seen crazy things happen. So, I'll guarantee you that one or two of these teams that we're expecting, like, no doubt they're going to get through, something's going to happen. Where they don't, mm-hmm. or it was a trial by fire to get through, or whatever. And it could very well be Group A. It's a very much a, probably other than Saudi Arabia, you have three teams that are fighting for two spots.
It's wide open.
For sure. It's going to be one of the, I mean, maybe past that, the first game is going to be cool because it's, you know, the home team, Russia. Maybe the opponent isn't who you'd want it to be in the glamour first game or whatnot. But it's still awesome. And then, you know, you get Egypt and Uruguay the next day. And that could be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then you get Portugal and Spain and at 2 o'clock that same day. So, already those first 2 days of World Cup was going to be intense. And yeah, I don't know anything else. Obviously, again, we're not doing predictions right now. You're going to have to wait till June 9th for that one. But got anything else you guys want to say about Group A?
Part of me was a teeny bit surprised if this wasn't talked about as somewhat of a group of life. But I have a feeling when we get to that third match day, that's exactly what it's going to be.
Very well could be. I think when you talk about group of lives, you're talking about all four teams having a chance. And mm-hmm. I just don't see it for Saudi Arabia. Like,
well, 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong about that. But, like, I would think of a group of life like the Group D, with Argentina, Iceland, Croatia, Nigeria, you know, or a Group E, Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, Serbia, you know.
Fair point.
Yeah. I mean, so, or you could call it the Group of Death, whatever you want. Some people decide to call that a Group of Death or Group of Life, whatever. This is going to be fun to go through all these groups. Like I said, Group B, which seems rather top-heavy, looking at it on paper. But we'll get to that on Thursday night, Friday morning, whenever you're listening to this. If you do enjoy what you heard, of course, come back for all of our World Cup group previews. But obviously, we do a show at least once a week, if not twice, covering mostly American side of things. So if you're listening from the other side of the world, I'm sorry, probably won't interest you too much. But if you are listening from the American side of the world and you care at all about MLS or the National Women's Soccer League or just U.S. Men's National Team or U.S. Women's National Team, we discuss all of that. And we discuss the news that's going on. We do discuss international team news. If you listen to the show that we did on Sunday, you'll hear us talk about how FIFA is just really tournament crazy right now and how that's not really a good thing and various other things that are going on. So Yeah, make sure you go back and listen to Soccer to the Max at least once a week. Hit subscribe if you enjoyed, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, wherever it is you listen to us, Podbean. Go check out Last Word on Soccer for Rachel's wonderful NWSL recaps and whatever else she is writing over there. Make sure you check out W10Net.com, of course, for the official soccer podcast of that wonderful website. And until tomorrow, hope you're getting World Cup hyped like we are. See you later, everybody.
Peace.
Adios.
I'm not going very far.
It's too uncomfortable.
I'm in a hurry.
Sometimes I just forget.
There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. You're not only putting yourself at risk of injury or death, it could also cost you lots of money. Cops are writing tickets, so why take the risk? Do the smart thing and start buckling up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.